What we'll do in this course is examine mostly what I think is the best fantasy to come out in the past 50 years, and also talking about some of the older materials that leads in. We'll have a very strong focus on J.R.R. Tolkien, because Tolkien is the father figure, if you were, that all subsequent fantasy has to deal with. They either have to react against him or imitate him or try to escape from his shadow in some way. We're also going to look at the ways that some mass market fantasy may transcend its category, may reach the point where it can be both a bestseller and an important work of art, and not simply because it's a part of popular culture or because it's influenced a lot of people, but because as a literary artifact, it's done something that hasn't been done before. I would argue that Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, Ursula Le Guin's Earthsea books, and Robert Holdstock's Mythago, Wood, and Lavandus at least have reached a position in 20th century literature where they deserve to be taken just as seriously as many of the other important mainstream texts that come along. Perhaps fantasy literature is not only a new invention of the 20th century, despite the fact that we're going to connect it to the 19th, it really is invented in the 20th century. But perhaps, as many people think, fantasy is the rebirth or the reanimation of something that is very old and something that came before. And what I'm talking about here is epic and traditional oral epic, in fact. And that brings us all the way back to texts like Beowulf, The Song of Roland, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, texts that we have as written copies, but texts that reflect very clearly a pre-existing oral tradition. And I want to take a little time here to talk about what that means, because people throw around the term oral tradition without really thinking clearly how it works. Now, oral tradition started to be studied seriously in the 1930s, when two Harvard researchers, Milman Parry and Albert Lord, went off to the former Yugoslavia and began collecting, using that new technology of recording, collecting oral folktales. And what they noticed in the Muslim parts of Yugoslavia in particular is there was a tradition during Ramadan of the men of the village going to a coffee house and listening to long epic tales that were sung by people called guslari. And the guslari were called that because they played an instrument called the gusla, which is a one-stringed instrument played with a bow. And I have to say, as much as I've tried to be a good sport and enjoy the music, it sounds like a cat being strangled. But nevertheless, the guslari would sing these enormously long epic tales. Now, Parry and Lord became particularly interested in these because they noticed that they were done in a form very much like hexameters. Those are 6 meters in a line, which is what the works of Homer, the Odyssey and the Iliad, were done in. And so Parry and Lord started to possibly see a connection between Homer and these living oral traditions, and they started to record them. And they learned some really amazing things. The first was that even though these things were 3,000, 4,000 lines long, they were never the same from one performance to the other. So it was clear that the singers had not memorized the giant long epic poems that they were producing. And studying these singers and asking them what they were doing and seeing how they worked led to what's called the theory of oral composition.